try to call the meeting to order now at 5:38. And Christy is not present. She was not able to join us tonight. And so we have the approval of the June board agenda. Do I have a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
And seconded by Mr. McFadden. And
okay,
then
can anybody else hear besides me? I can't hear. Anybody talking?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll pull this closer. We have a motion and a second, and I will take a roll call vote.
Carla?
Yeah.
Gilda?
Yes.
And Denise?
Yes.
Thank you. Motion carries.
I can no longer hear anybody. Can anybody else hear?
Yes.
I can hear you.
I'm not hearing.
You have it on mute?
No.
No, because he can speak.
Huh.
Your volume, Bill?
Senator Anderson, can you check your speakers?
It could be your battery and, yeah, your speakers. You can't hear any, Bill, you can't hear anyone. No, he can't. Okay, it sounds like that motion passed, though.
Yes, it passed.
Okay.
Yes, it did. Did we continue?
Yeah, well, we can continue. Yep, Bill will get it. He'll work through it.
Hopefully he gets that figured out. Do we have any public comments? Has anybody submitted any public comments, or do we have anybody else joining us tonight? No?
I think so.
No public comments? And the next item for board discussion items, attachment A, environmental overview of education in California.
Yeah.
Dory?
Make sure I'm not on mute. I'm not on mute, right? You guys can hear me? So board members, there has been just a lot of different happenings over the last couple months with kind of the, I know I've been giving monthly updates on COVID and the impact that it has had on education. So I thought maybe we could just take a few minutes this evening at our board meeting just to really talk through some of the impacts or really just sort of what the education community looks like as of today. Again, we are, as I have continuously mentioned, we are in a very ever-changing and very kind of uncertain environment. And these uncertainties are really impacting us from a lot of different levels, definitely from policy, on budget and economic impacts, accountability. So I just kind of wanted to take a few minutes and just kind of walk through some of these changes for us. At this point, I believe all of us, and including California Department of Education, the state, are just following the latest information as far as it relates to COVID, as well as really trying to begin an approach for potentially reopening and how that will look over the next couple weeks, moving into the summer. We do know that at the beginning of COVID, the governor moved swiftly and issued a lot of executive orders, which allowed continued funding for the schools. It suspended a lot of policy regulations. He suspended testing. which suspended essentially different elements of the dashboard accountability system. Those are all coming up to expire at the end of this month. So we're anxiously waiting information on really what our next step. There's quite a number of proposals out there. I don't think anything at this point has been officially approved. There's some proposals out there by saying, you know, that they're still going to hold us hold harmless, and that's the term they're using. Moving into next year, they're considering using the current ADA from this year. There's also other proposals of not using it. Just a large variety of different discussions are out there. What we do know is that the governor actually just issued the end of May, and I have it in your board packet, another resolution as it relates to teacher certifications. We had a lot of different discussions prior to even COVID about the industry and the lack of teachers within the industry, and some of the challenges I think that teachers have to go through or hurdles they have to jump through when it comes to different testing requirements. There's a large number of tests, and I know I'll leave some off. There's the CBEST, there's the RECA, I think there's another one. Ultimately, at this point, he has suspended the requirements of those. I think he recognizes in this environment, coupled with the industry's challenges, the ability to take these tests as well as support the credentialing in that area needs a little bit of a reprieve. So that's the one thing we do know. We also have received word, and I know we spoke a little bit about this at our last meeting, about really the impact of the budget. The governor is asking for a 10% reduction on our LCFF funding, which is significant. In addition to that, they're speaking of deferrals. As well, the legislature is coming out with rejecting that. So really at this point, we're kind of just trying to determine which way this is going to go as far as the budgeting process for next year. I mentioned at our last board meeting, many of the superintendents did write a letter sharing with the governor. With the additional amount of requirements as far as cleaning and sanitization, social distancing, a different model of education and instructional delivery, cutting our budget is almost impossible to be able to facilitate, making it a very big challenge for a lot of our schools. Part of the governor's proposal was that if the federal government stepped in, then he could pull back all of his cuts. So there's still a possibility that, you know, the federal government will be able to apply some additional funding to help offset some of those proposed budget cuts. Most recently, and I think it was just actually this last week, the California Department of Education has been speaking about releasing certain guidelines as far as the operations of schools, because I think that's really where a lot of the schools are at this point. You know, this school year is essentially ended. What are we going to do for next year? How is school going to even happen? Is it going to be online? Is it going to be a combination of being online? The California Department of Education did release some guidance on that. So in your packet, what I did provide you with, it's quite a lengthy document. It's over 60 to 70 pages, but I just wanted to provide you board members with a snapshot of some of that information. So what I did for you was I actually provided you the table of contents of that he calls it Stronger Together document that really outlines the some guidelines of coming back to school and what that could possibly look like. I also appreciated what he had provided, the very nice timeline of the recent COVID pandemic. It really takes you through what kind of happened in March, along with all of the issuance of the executive orders. Then it kind of goes on to April and shares with us what happened in April. And then he kind of continues. He brings us to where we're at now. Also part of the document is a lot of different resources and a lot of different health and safety checklists, connections to remote learning. So I tried to provide you just with a few pages. You are welcome to go, if you would like, I can go ahead and send you the full document. Again, it is a quite a lengthy document, so I tried to pull out the sort of the summary, some of the summary pages of that, which really brings us to kind of where we are at today. Both Ms. Brandner as well as Mr. Anderson and I have spent probably the last month or so just trying to track all of this information, much like most, I think, school districts have been doing, and also trying to just get our hands around, you know, what is this? How is this going to even look for us, and what can we do with our current school instructional options, knowing we want to be the most responsive to parents. Likewise, I think with all of the other superintendents, that's what they're grappling with, is really how is school going to look like now, quote unquote, in this new normal. Between, you know, working through budget issues, policy changes, as well as even down to operations. How is operations going to look like? I will pause there and ask if there's kind of any feedback or any questions on those three areas before I move into, I think, also a larger significant impact is our AB 1505. Goes into effect for charters July 1st.
Doreen, I think it's important to also say that even with ICOE's guidelines, which are in line with the state guidelines, that they're not mandating anything. You know, it's not that they're mandating, as the superintendent of education said in the meeting that he had last week or 2 weeks. I don't even know, but he mentioned that, you know, with the over 1,000 school districts, you know, it would be impossible to mandate anything because each district has, in each area has their own things that they're dealing with. And I think that's, again, that idea of being on top of what's happening in Imperial Valley or in San Diego, San Bernardino Valley, you know? So there is no mandate, you know, as to what we have to do.
Yeah, I had the same thing. Todd Pinnell is in our Rotary Club, and he gave us an update, but it's not easy. There are so many different rules, and you know, every school had surveys with their parents, and just like the Ballantyne Academy, so it's still up in the air what's going to happen, huh?
Yeah,
I'm a little concerned though. I think maybe is it time for us to reach out to the El Centro Elementary School District, because I have no clue what they're thinking. You know, what are they thinking? You know, and I mean, I know the ICOE guidelines said that, you know, it would be good if the Valley schools, we all kind of go in sync with the idea of supporting each other in the direction that we go on. So I'm a little bit miffed, to be quite honest. I've heard nothing. We've heard from the high school and the middle school and different things that they're working on, but we have not heard anything from El Centro Elementary School. So is it time to reach out to them, Doreen, do you think?
I think so. I think we can definitely reach out to Mr. Ledoux and just kind of get where his feedback is and where he's kind of lying. He has been all year amazingly quiet So I think that's interesting, is usually we do hear something from Mr. Ledoux. He was very quick though, in all honesty, when he did decide to shut down, he did give me a heads up that, hey, you know, this announcement's gonna go out, guys. Let me know how you're gonna proceed. So I think if we just kind of reach out, and now might be the time. I think up until everyone was most likely waiting on the CDE guidance with bated breath. And now that we've had an opportunity to receive that, kind of begin to look at it, maybe now is the time to reach out to him and see if he did have any direction at this point. San Bernardino has been quiet as well.
Yeah. Well, because again, we were waiting for something, and what we got were, well, these are the mandates, but do what you want to do.
And I think that's the reason we haven't heard anything from San Bernardino. You know, there's such a large, large district. From the staff members that I spoke to, they were anticipating getting more directives, more specific guidance, more rules. And they were going to base their plan on that. And I think they were a little bit surprised at the lack of direction. So they're kind of having to make, you know, just like everybody else, they're having to make it up. But they're so, so big that I think it's going to take them a minute. So I think we could reach out right now for the San Bernardino side, but I don't think we're going to learn very much by reaching out right away.
I think that what we might be able to do, I think I was talking with you about this too, Shannon, yesterday at our meeting, is maybe even just kind of reach out and share with them where we're at and see if they want to weigh in and provide us with any feedback. I think us developing our plan and then presenting it to them and seeing if they want to change it or tell us anything based on that, but almost being proactive at this point.
I agree.
You know, I think that it goes to kind of what we were talking about yesterday and the meeting that yesterday afternoon, the meeting that we had. I mean, I think there is so much uncertainty that at all levels, and we've got multiple school districts. I think we are going to have to take an attempt to create some sensibility for our schools and then share that with them and let them react to it. I think that there's just, I mean, San Diego today, I mean, earlier, last week, you know, published their guidelines. And so basically, I think this is trickling out a little at a time. But I think the onus is really going to be on us, you know, to really make sure we're proactive in this regard. So I would just, the model that we talked about, you know, Doreen, Shannon, and Bill, you guys working to get as much information as you can from the districts that you're in, and then create the best scenario that we can, given the reality that we're in. And you know, because if they turn the light switch and say, and I'm just going to say, you know, August 1st, well, for all intended purposes, August 1st is really right around the corner, you know. And so I just think that, you know, rather than waiting for them, I think we're going to have to be a little bit more proactive in this. I just believe it's to our best interests.
I would agree with that. And I think we also have to look at the parent surveys that we have and we'll yep. and that information. You know, in the parent surveys, I think, again, we look at the large percentage of population that say what they want, that falls in line with, okay, opening up. But then I think we also have to be cognizant of the smaller percentage of population who say, and there are some that say, I'm not going to send my kid to school until there's a vaccine. You know, I mean, oh, okay. So then you got 10, 15, 20, maybe 50 parents that say no. What's our recourse to that? How do we respond to that? You know, and how do we provide then education to that? But I guess we'll get into that later, but I just want to, you know, I just thought it fit in here.
Yeah.
You
know?
I have a question regarding it, and as a parent, I filled out the survey and I had a conversation with one of the teachers. My concern is more for the teachers, because again, I know what I want for my kids, but how are the teachers responding to that survey, and how are they responding to the choices that were given? How are they going to handle, I guess, parenting in a sense? I know they do it every day already, but now to the extreme, don't touch your face, wash your hands, don't get too close to little Susie, stay over here, stay in your space. Are the teachers prepared to go back? I mean,
I don't think the teachers are prepared at all. I mean, I think that they are echoing what Mr. Anderson and I just said, is that there's so many extra steps that need to be in place. Mm-hmm. But nobody, you know, we don't have a solid plan in place, and we don't even have that plan from the state yet either, even so far as basic funding for all those extra steps. So I think, right, at least on my side, the teachers are going to feel more secure when they are told what to do. They really want that direction. They want that guidance. I have no doubt that they'll be okay with the extra steps and the extra works. They just want the specifics on what it's going to look like.
I think the issue, though, is one of safety. And I'll be quite honest, that was a point of conversation in my last staff meeting with the staff, and asking them, how do you feel about coming back to work? And I know I have teachers who are concerned. I have one teacher who is with child. I have another teacher who, you know, has a history of sometimes having a low immune system and is very concerned about being healthy. I have another teacher who just had a child, you know, so we have extenuating, plus you have a principal who's in his 60s, for God's sake, okay? I'm not going to lie about that, you know? So we look at it from a perspective of, we are really, you know, and I was looking at some blurb on MSN today about, you know, the different places where, you know, COVID is, a greater chance of catching, and they mentioned the bars, and they mentioned the gyms, and they mentioned the concerts, and they mentioned the Donald Trump, fanfare. And then they say schools, you know, because every time we put ourselves out there, we're putting ourselves at risk, you know. And then the question on the table for us is, how do we mitigate the risk? And again, I know we've presented a list of different things that we will do. And then the next question will be, how do we respond to the parents who don't agree with that, or the teachers that still don't feel safe with that? And I think part of that can only happen after we make a decision to find out what's going to happen. Because what I'm getting from my teachers is they want to know. They need to know, what are we going to do, Mr. Anderson? How are we going to respond to this? What does the school day look like, you know? And I think once we make that decision, then we have to deal with the response from, you know, call them outliers, or call them people who say, I've got a different idea, you know, and how do we then address their concerns, and how do we then provide education for their children? Okay, so those are the questions on the table. You know, but I think none of them can be answered until we make a decision, you see. And I think, you know, Shannon and I, we looked at, and Doreen, we've been looking at the data of the survey we sent, and, you know, we've got a goodly amount of feedback from our parents.
I mean, if you look at the survey, it sounds like a lot of parents want the school to open.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, parents, I mean, to a large degree, it is a self-interest issue also for parents.
Absolutely.
You know, and I mean, I think that is one element, but it also is a safety issue for us. So, I mean, on many, many different levels, I think we have to think through it. You know, I do think that at some point in time, they're going to have to be scenarios that are going to have to be created. We won't know. I don't think we're going to know all of the answers that we want to feel comfortable anytime in the near term. And I think the issue winds up being, with even with having discussions with teachers, if we said, what happens if, okay, school does start on the 15th of August.
24th, okay. 24th. I mean, wait, not the 15th. Is it the 15th or the 24th?
24.
No. I'm just doing a what if. I mean, it could be September 1 or it could be August 1st. I mean, what if that happened, how would we, you know, as a teaching core respond to what is it we would need to do differently based on what we know right now? And I think chaos is what we're in right now. And I think we are going to have to, again, create some sensibility out of chaos as best we can. And I would hope that we could get some clarity from the districts in terms of when and how. But I'm kind of like Shannon, like you said, and Bill, like you said, you know, I don't believe folks know. I just don't believe they know. And they keep punting and kicking the can down the down the street, but at a certain point in time, somebody is going to say go.
Right. We have to say that, Gerald, and we have to. Then I think the most important piece is how do we keep the children safe?
Yes.
And I think part of that is with the idea of a cleaning regime, with the attempt to have as much social distancing as we can. To possibly silo children so that they're within groups of people if anything happens, to have a contingency plan of if someone or a family member gets it, to be able to shut down that class or even maybe the school for 14 days. You know, we need to have contingency plans in place that demonstrate that A, our utmost priority is safety.
Yes.
And then that the next piece to that has to do with communication. Yes. We have to really have communication with parents. You know, I mean, several weeks ago, I had a parent whose family member worked in a preschool center for people who were, working still, and turned out that somebody in their family had it. Mm-hmm. And then they were supposed to be quarantined. And then the father came into the school picking up a damn report card. You know, don't come into my building. You're supposed to be on quarantine for 14 days.
Yeah.
You know, so we need that kind of communication as well. Parents and everybody has to communicate so that we are on the same page, you know, and that's important too.
Yeah.
You know, but other than that, if we can make the changes that need to be done to as best we can ensure security and safety for our kids, you know, I think then we can move forward with educating them,
mm-hmm.
you know, and looking at the survey data, I think we have a large population of our parents that are saying, yeah, let's, we want school to begin. And maybe that's, you know, because by the time they come back to school, it'll be a half a year without having any reprieve,
mm-hmm.
you know, but I have had conversations with parents and their ideas, you know, show me the plan. I'm ready to go back to school. You know, let me make sure that you are really working on keeping the children safe, you know, and that's changing the way we enter the building, exit the building, you know, temperature checks, you know, all of that. I mean, it's a lot. And again, who knows, you know, I mean, again, when we have to look at, here we are in June, but then we also have to look at August. Where are we in the valley with the numbers with COVID-19? Because I can assure you that we will in the school do what we have to do. But my question is, will the parents and the outside world do what they need to do to ensure what we're doing? Mm-hmm. And that's my concern. I know we can control our school, but I can't control somebody out there who's going to a birthday party and nobody's wearing masks and they're all hugging each other and they're having a great time and it's a whole weekend fiesta. And then all of a sudden, oh my gosh, you know, so-and-so's Tia has this and that. And, you know, six people start having COVID-19 and the kids have gone to school. You see, that's those areas that we have no control over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's where the communication piece with the parents and the understanding with our community that we really, if we're going to have school and you really want school to be what it was to a degree, then we all have to be on the same page. And that means if your kid has a fever, your kid is feeling sick, you got to stay home, you got to, you know, you got to give it the 14 days. And then again, where does that fit in with the ADA and everything like that? Is the state of California going to say, oh, well, you know, you had, you know, 150 kids needed to take 14 days. That's 14 times 150, which equals this amount of money. You know, what is the state going to do with response to that? You know, I mean, there's a lot of, there's a lot to think about, Gerald, you know?
Well, let's say we open the school in August. What happens if somebody get COVID? Do we have anything going to be any liability issues? Anybody going to sue us? Because
the question on the table is, do we need to put together a release form? A legal document that says, you know, I am assuming the risk of sending my child to school and will not hold the school or anyone liable for this. Is that something we need to do legally? You know, I mean, that's the risk we all take. And then do we need that for the faculty as well?
And unfortunately, I think for the teachers, with Gavin Newsom's order, I believe that the employees, I think it's a presumptive workers' comp claim. I mean, I think they're accepting them across the board. At least that's what I'm facing at work right now, and I've got a pile of them. So we're told not to even try to contest it. But, you know, it's like you said, you know, they may be social distancing at work, but you can't help what they're doing on their free time. And,
right.
And again, you know, they're hanging out after work and they come to work the next day and there you go. You know, you have possible exposures at work. So, that was my concern. How are the teachers supposed to focus on educating the children if they're constantly worried about health and safety for themselves and the students? And that's my big concern, is it going to be almost like another, not a wasted year because there's an attempt at getting back to educating them, but is it, you know, I just feel like, you know, what's the right answer? You know, do we attempt to bring everybody back and get half of them sick and then all go home again because half the school's been sick, you know? Or is it just that repetitive cycle? Everybody's quarantined for 14 days. Okay, we're going back. And then again, somebody else comes back and, oh, we're going home again for 14 days 2 weeks later. So I get it. There's a lot of questions and a lot of unknowns. And, you know, at some point we have to try to figure out, somebody has to take that first step and come up with a plan. So you guys have a lot on on your plate.
Oh, thank you very much. Welcome to my hell, okay? These are my 3 o'clock thoughts, you know, okay?
I'm up to my eyeballs in legal briefs and protocols and guidance at work, so I know what you're going through, and getting a number of people to follow the same guideline and 150 plus people to adhere to that as well, or to you know, get others to adhere to it. It's been chaotic, so I can't imagine with, you know, being responsible for children on top of that. You know, that's where I feel for you, and I support whatever decision you guys make. So.
Yeah, Bill, I think it's a really good idea that you contact Mr. LeDuc's department and find out what they're doing. So maybe we can sort of do in tune with what the elementary is going to do forward.
Mm-hmm. And I think we also have to take into consideration the children in need who are falling further behind because of the fact that there are children, and these are usually the children who come from families and households of need, who are not in any way, shape, or form benefiting from the online education. you know, and they will fall further and further behind. The gap will become bigger and bigger, and the idea of overcoming that, if this continues for 2 years, becomes even more problematic. You know, I mean, and then we have to think about, I mean, I think about too, you know, the free and reduced lunch and the breakfast program and how are we going to feed the children? And, you know, we have to take all of these things into consideration. You know, how do we feed the child who comes from a home where there's not enough money to have food? And that's important. You know, I mean, there are a lot of contingencies that we have to think about, you know, and a lot of times, you know, you think about, okay, you know, what model are we going to choose and how does it best serve all of our children, but also our children in need, you know, and there are a lot of them. So, you know, I'm concerned about that. I know there are several children I'm concerned about that we have not heard from, you know, at all. And, you know, that's troubling. But I think if we make a decision and just move with or talk to the district too, but think about the decision we're going to make so that we can put our flag in the ground for now with the idea of then having a change contingency. All right, we'll say we'll do this. Mm-hmm. And then after we say we do this, let's again survey the parents about how many parents feel comfortable about this. And let's find out then the parents who are not comfortable, then what alternative program that we need to have happening parallel to this do we need to provide, which then could serve us if we do have to close down, if it's an online program as well, you say, and to actually communicate that these are our contingencies. We will open up, we will do social distancing as best we can. We will definitely do extensive cleaning of counters and things. You know, I bought something that's 99.9% killing coronavirus. You know, you don't even have to wipe it off, you know? Things like that, you know, that these are the things that we will do. We'll change our, you know, our release policy, our coming into the building, temperature checks, all of these things. To say, this is what we are doing. And then to see if we can say, do you have faith that we're able to do this? And to be ready for the changes. And if there's a small population of people, and you'll know that every contingency creates a different kind of problem, you know, how do we deal with that with staffing? You know, what if we have a few kindergarten kids that parents don't want their kids to come to school, and there's two there, and there's five from fifth grade, and three from second grade, and well, we can't access a whole teacher for that. So then you have to deal with staffing issues, you know? But if we can sit there and work it out and say, this is where we're gonna start, I think that's important. Because I know I'm going crazy not knowing, okay? Because my mind just goes on and on and on. Okay, I'm thinking all of them, trust me.
You know,
Every one of them.
I think, Bill, because I think with all of us, that is what the natural order of things is for us, and that is to continuously roll them around in our head. And I think something that you said earlier really does help. When we create a mark in the sand, it gives us some, now we've got a plan around the mark in the sand. And even though you will maybe have to make some adjustments as you mentioned, I think the fact of the matter is you can begin to focus your thinking and your actions and your behavior based on that mark in the sand. Right. And so I think that is something that, you know, we were talking about just the other day in terms of it, but I think you and Doreen and Shannon will look at that quote unquote for our charter school. What is our mark in the sand? And then what things do we need to do from marching back from that to where we are? And we won't be able to do everything at one time. But somebody will have to focus on sanitizing and cleaning. Somebody's gonna have to focus on parent engagement. and communication. Somebody else is going to have to focus on instructional strategy. I mean, those are all elements we'll have to work on, but at least we will be purposefully working on things that can keep our mind focused on you know, kind of moving forward. And it's going to change. It's no doubt about it. But I mean, I think that's going to help us make the most sense out of something that is totally uncertain at this point in time.
But we have to make a decision, and then I think we also, before we even claim our decision, we have to communicate with the district.
Yes, absolutely. Well, this was a good, robust discussion.
Yeah.
but this is an essential discussion for the board and management to be involved with. I mean, because this anxiety, this uncertainty is real. And realistically, thinking about how we're going to manage it is something that we are better off taking everybody's input into the process. I really do feel for the, as you said, Bill, they're teachers basically that have compromised immune system. You know, how do we manage that? You know, we don't want to just disregard them. Oh, well, if you don't come back on Tuesday the 15th, then oh well. You know, so I mean, it's a lot of issues that we're going to have to work on. But I think the sooner we get our marks in the sand, the better we can start answering those questions, I think. And let people know we care, because I mean, we said it correctly. Safety for the teachers, safety for the children is paramount. And how do we have our messaging so that parents understand that it's not just safety for the children that are in our school, but their behavior and how that contributes to safety for their children and their family. So it's a lot we have to work on, but these are the right discussions to be having right now. They really are.
It definitely is just a dynamic process. You know, as we learn more and more about the budget implications, or we were reading somewhere that at this point, the governor is proposing to provide all the personal protective equipment. That was said something. We don't know any of the details on what that might look like, if each school is allocated a certain amount of funding, how that's all going to be unraveled. You know, he's talking about some one-time funding there. So all of those different elements, hopefully, over the next couple of weeks, we'll get more information around as well.
But I spent my 5,000 care funds, okay, on cleaning equipment, cafeteria tables, thermometers. I can do that. I wasn't gonna bust out. Once I heard him say that, I was like, okay, you know, I got my 350 masks, I got my thermometers, I got my cafeteria, I got my cleaning fluid, but not the whole year's worth. And he said that in that meeting. I said, okay, I'm gonna slow my roll.
We'll see, right? We'll see what comes to fruition.
We'll see. But we need to be ready, even because we don't know if that fund's coming. We need to be ready August, September, October, maybe even up to November.
I think if the funding does come, I think that's a definite great win for us. I would just have a contingency around it potentially not coming in as well.
Exactly.
Because we don't know. And a lot of his propositions, so to speak, are really contingent upon federal support. So that's another unknown also. Okay, I shared another significant impact to specifically in our charter community is the implementation of AB 1505 and 1507. I had provided you in your packet, I think one of the key things with AB 1505 as it relates to us as existing charter schools, granted there's a lot of different impacts for initial charter schools. But for existing charter schools is they really redefine the whole guidance on renewal. They extend some of the timelines in there prior to AB 1505, much like with our San Bernardino renewal, we submitted our charter. We had 30 days for a public hearing in theory. didn't work out that way, but in theory, and then another 30 days for the vote. Under AB 1505, we submit our charter. We now have 60 days for a public hearing, and then the natural course of the vote. They've also restricted some appeal rights. I think the biggest piece in there is really how they're going to evaluate. It's almost like they put in this three-tier system, a high, a middle, and a low. And if you, based on your academic achievement, you will hit, will fall in a high, a middle, or a low. And those really, those classifications define how many years your charter can be approved. They are open to, what they have said is to use alternative data besides just the testing, the school test, the statewide annual test data. They're saying that has to be, you know, research-based, normed, verified, and they're proposing to present a list of those acceptable assessments in January. The big question was, because we didn't have any testing this year, how is this going to impact renewals going forward? Based on the superintendent's letter, it appears that due to no testing this year, everyone is going to be defined as a middle classification. Now, they have actually a webinar next week to go into this in greater detail, as well as they'll be posting a list of current charters and their current classifications. They said the end of June, we'll see though. CDE has been historically a little running behind. I think they're probably going to be running more behind with COVID. How, in your board packet, I did try to highlight that section that the governor or the California Department of Education shares where they state, you know, AB 1505 talks about school-wide performance level. Because there was no testing this year, they used two consecutive years immediately preceding the renewal decision. A charter school without sufficient performance levels will be considered in the middle performing track. Accordingly, all schools will be placed in the middle performing track absence of the production of a 2020 dashboard. So it looks like that has been the decision at this point, because there is no testing data that they're going to defer all schools into that middle track. That middle track, just to reiterate, I provided you with a copy of what that middle track is. Middle track schools are eligible to receive a renewal for 5 years versus the high track, where they could have received a renewal for 7 years. Any questions about that? So it sounds like the CDE just took kind of the middle of the ground, the middle of the road with that. Currently, pre AB 1505, we were eligible for a 5-year renewal. Sounds like that's basically what they're saying in lieu right. of no testing material.
Right, no but testing. I think also, Doreen, we have 4 years of testing that I think puts us in that range anyway, and then we have MAP data that demonstrates growth right now as well. So, you know, we'll all be on that Zoom meeting webinar, because that was mentioned. That was mentioned at another meeting. They're all mixing together, Doreen, because I remember hearing that.
Yeah.
I don't know which one I was in, but yeah, definitely. But I feel like I think we have enough data over these years to demonstrate growth. Right. So I'm not losing too much sleep over it, but I'm losing a little bit.
And I truly believe, although they haven't published their official list of alternative data, we know enough about NWA MAP that most likely that will hit their list, because it is normed, it is research-based, it is verifiable data.
Right, definitely. We'll be all right.
Yeah. Any questions, board members, we will probably begin to prepare now that San Bernardino, knock on wood, yay, 5 years. Now we will begin to prepare to submit El Centro's, Mr. Anderson's, because it ends June. We are up this school year, actually. It's June 2021. So we want to try to begin to work on that, get it submitted. We don't know under, this new AB 1505, COVID, how all of this will impact that whole process.
Earlier is better, because then we can drop it on them and they're going to be so busy. COVID-19.
That's what I think.
We have no time for this. Let's just.
What I think you should do.
Yeah. Sometimes Lodu does the opposite, though, I'll tell you. We submitted, I think, right before the holidays, thinking, oh, they're all going to be in a good mood. They're going to push this thing through. And then they ask for an extension.
Right.
So we'll see. I think that probably covers, although I do want to share, as with everything else, as we're starting to look at the criteria for reopening, before we get into potential instructional models, we are looking at completely revamping our whole enrollment and our recruitment process. Historically, this was our time. You know, we were out at community events. We were promoting the school. We have been forced to use social media at this point, and some have a social media campaign. It's looking right now at San Bernardino. We're about at 201 interested families. El Centro is 274. We also are working on developing an online enrollment packet where families do not have to come into our office and drop off the packet. They can go online, they can upload all of their documents so that there's as minimal contact as possible. I do want to, though, take a moment to show board members something that Mr. Anderson, in this light of social media, put together for his enrollment. And I hats off, because it was definitely just Mr. Anderson and his on-site team. And I think that's creating Hollywood. I'll show you the commercial.
Go for it.
Now my cat's going to join. You know she loves this.
I know. I'll pop up in a minute.
Welcome to Bellington Academy for the Arts and Sciences. We here at Bellington Academy provide a hands-on project learning as well as develop well-rounded students. Bellington Academy is a free public charter school with no inter-district transfer needed. We offer a high quality curriculum as well as provide specialty courses in our arts and sciences. Let me show you around. Here we are in the lower grade hallway. To my left here is Ms. Bettis' first grade classroom. As you can see, some of the samples of their work that they've done this year. So they've read a story by Milton Williams, and then based on their comprehension, here's some of their work. Here we are in the cafeteria where we serve breakfast and lunch for the students daily. Hi, we're here in one of our fourth grade classrooms. As you can see, we like to create a friendly and calming work environment for our students with our flexible seating arrangements in order for our students to better create and learn. Here we are in our science and engineering classroom, one of our specialty courses that we offer all our students. The others include technology, music, and art. This concludes the tour of our school. If you're interested in enrolling, come to our website, bellingtonacademy.org, or email me at dsync@voa-swcal.org. Thank you for watching, and see you in August.
I think the buffering's off, but it's all good. And I do want to point out that, you know, you'll notice when she was walking down that first grade hall, she was very clear about staying in the middle of the hallway so you wouldn't see the bubbles in the tile. That's just an inside thing.
The floors look great though. Shiny.
Yeah. You know, that's Mr. Jones. Mr. Jones is really getting involved in using the iMovies and things like that, you know, and there are other things they've been working on. That's great.
That's good job, Bill. Good job.
Great.
That's great.
Great. Thank you. I have to, every time I watch it, and I've watched it probably 10, 15 times by now, I get just as excited as I did when I first saw it. So good job, Bill. Thank you. Transitioning now, board members, we were talking a lot about this new norm. If we don't have any more questions, and the next topic really dovetails into our current one, if I may, I can move into the potential education models post-COVID. Mm-hmm. So our team, and again, I want to send a thank you to Mr. Anderson and Ms. Brandner, because this is really the culmination of all of their work. It actually began with sending out a survey to our parents. I feel like we actually got some very good response for an online survey with the students not being present every day. It really took our teachers trying to get them to complete it, that communication strand. So we started with our survey. And then from that, we began some discussion around potential instructional models. And the survey actually aligns to these potential instructional models. So I know we talked earlier, I had provided you with the survey results. At the same time, you can get a feeling of what parents are feeling at this point and really where they're leaning to. We tried to divide these approaches again into the different ones that we thought could be possible based on some research out there and based on kind of what we've been reading other districts and all across the nation are trying to do. I don't believe, honestly, it will be one or another. I think it will be a number of instructional strategies over time. Or a combination. We might, you know, we were talking the other day, we might be having site-based instruction, real-time school, and have some students still doing remote learning because that's just what's working best for their family. So I don't think it's an all or none type of situation. We talked about even having real-time site-based school and somehow be able to record that so that students can actually tap in to the real-time instructional delivery from home. So we could have students in the classroom as well as students participating in that instruction at home at the same time. Again, working out the technology with that. So we began to list some of these different models. We began an initial discussion around pros and cons of each one. I am sure that there are significantly more pros and cons than what we had listed, but we thought maybe it could begin a good part or lay a foundation even just for some discussion at our meeting tonight to kind of hear the board members' feedback on this. So the first one is just school will open, will operate, you know, as we have done in the past, will of course, with safety of parents, children and staff at the priority, we'll put in extra cleaning, we'll put in sanitizing, you know, we'll change how access to the building, all of those different strategies we talked about earlier, that's in play. That's one option. And then we kind of talked about some pros and cons of that. The school day will be as it was, attendance will be optimal, probably academic achievement will not be as compromised if we're able to be in our regular site-based instruction. The flip side of that really is increased exposure, and then also potentially more absenteeism. And again, at this point, we don't know how the state's gonna deal with that. You know, if they're gonna say, great guys, we're gonna hold you harmless for absenteeism and give everyone, I don't know, a 98% ADA rate, whatever. You know, I don't know how they're gonna approach this right now. But really that was kind of our first model. I think just talking on the side with both Ms. Brandner and Mr. Anderson, that's probably like what we're hoping is to return to physical instruction with lots and lots of cleaning and sanitization and trying to get back to normal as much as possible. But again, I'm curious to hear from the board members if you can think of any other pros and cons on that one.
Have you guys thought about getting, if you're gonna go with that, with additional hand washing machine or something like that?
What we're thinking about doing for that, Carla, is we will no longer have children. You know, children used to have the freedom to go to the bathroom when they wanted, but we can't do that anymore because we want to ensure. Part of it is if you go to the school changes due to COVID-19 page as well, and that's just a few of the things that we talk about. That goes in tandem with the idea of opening school as it will with changes. You know, we would have to have, and this is again where I have to shift the culture a little bit, and I would like to have parent volunteers come in, but bathroom breaks. So everybody's gonna go to the bathroom at different times in the day so that we can actually monitor the hand washing and make sure it's done. Plus every room has one of those sanitizer machines in their room. So we'll be filling those up as well so that when they come back to the classroom, they can sanitize their hands through that. But I think it's important then to have people at the bathrooms, and this is where I'm hoping for volunteers because teachers are gonna have to be managing this socially distanced class, to have them help monitor good hand washing techniques. You know, it's something that we have to do. You know, so these are some, so with this comes a lot of the school changes that might happen due to COVID-19. You know,
you can install a hand washing machine up front?
We have one already.
Oh, you have? Where?
Well, if you come in, it's right behind the main desk underneath one of those chairs. It's
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Huh. So we have one there, and every classroom has one in it. Every classroom has a hand sanitizer right by the door. So, you know, we're working on getting just refills for that right now. So they all have that, you know, but I think important too, you know, I mean, you know, the idea that a kindergarten kid is going to go to the bathroom on their own and wash their hands well, I don't think so. Yeah. So we really have to monitor that, you know,
okay.
So there will have to be changes in place, you know, as well as the fact that, you know, we'd have to pull out the water fountains because those are germ factories, and then everybody's going to have to bring a face mask, and everybody's going to have, you know, bring a water bottle. And, you know, there's going to be a little bit of expectations on all the families with regard to keeping the children safe. I mean, and that's the bottom line. You know, the bottom line is, can we all work together to really take this seriously? I mean, I hate to tell you, I was watching a video the other day in New York City where I used to hang out in St. Mark's Place down in the village. These people running around without their shirts on and no mask, and the place was full of everybody dancing and hugging and drinking. And I was thinking to myself, you have lost your mind. You know, we are not done yet, you know? So everybody's got to get on board with the reality that, no, this is serious. We're not done, whether you're stressed out about it or feel done with it or not. You know, so, you know, there would be the changes that we talk about and probably more as well, you know, and when you get to those other pros and cons or the other school models, the one thing I forgot to put in there and I thought about was the scheduling. You know, each and every one of these changes, if we go to a half day, if we go to a online day, part this, part that, will change the master schedule. That's a bear. That's a real bear to change the master schedule. All right. And, so,
and how is that even going to look? I mean, yeah.
That was my 3 o'clock in the morning terror call last week.
To meet the scheduling needs of families, families with multiple children, families with odd hour jobs, things like that. That's as much of a bear as the master schedule. I mean, that would be really challenging.
Yes. Parents have to work. Parents are, trying to open up the economy. You know, schools are important for that because if children don't have somewhere to go, and rather the child be at school than be alone at home, trying to manage an online course, which sometimes is happening right now or happened prior to now, so all of these things, So that's the first one.
So the next option we talked about is really like alternating schedule days. Some students come on one day and the others come on another day. And we provided some pros and cons on those really. Ultimately, a pro would be it would assist us in, social distancing, because that's going to be a consideration that we're going to have to think about. And it's also an opportunity because there's less students in a class to have a stronger classroom management. Also, one-on-one academic support. We definitely believe it would create some cons on that. It would create less student time on task. That whole impact of parents, workforce, supporting that's parents' needs, the menu situation with breakfast and lunch. How do we give them meals? Do we give them meals when they're not in school on that day? A lot of planning work on the part of the teachers with that, as well as their instructional delivery. So then the other options we looked at actually were some 100% online learning. And again, that's where we're at now. I think it goes without saying some of those cons of the online learning. Just really significant impact of academic achievement, that loss. Although, Mr. Randerson, I don't want to steal your thunder. I know you actually piloted using the map, the NWA, because Mr. Anderson was so looking forward to doing the third benchmark testing with the NWA for spring, and then COVID happened. He couldn't get it done because he truly wanted to see the growth there and the results. So what he actually did, a group of his teachers piloted the use of NWA through this online process. So they're just now gathering the results of that. Students took the test remotely. They're trying to gather those results, and they're going to see, hey, did we have, what do they look like?
Just loosely saying, we did see with the Zoom lessons and the continual online with this class, we did see growth, and that would be Maggie's class as well. She was one of the students that took the NWEA test as well. But we just wanted to see that if we were put in a position where we had to go to this, would it be possible to bench line assess our students? And again, parents' support is important for that, and making sure that everything was downloaded on the browsers and that they had everything they needed and that nobody was giving them the answers.
Bill, how has the online distance learning been so far? Do you have any idea?
Well, the thing is this, Carla, and again, we spent time in my staff going through reading a lot of articles about online education and the assessment and the different things going on. It's important to understand that from a lot of the things we read, the reality was it was pointing towards more formative assessment than summative assessment. And at this point, it was formatively assessing student learning to get a sense, a gist of the idea of where they were, and then also keying in a lot on the social emotional aspect as well, because again, you were dealing with children who were, you know, in stress. So the idea of actually, you know, developing assessments on an online forum is something that we have not put into place yet. This was a summative assessment that we did via MAP testing, but from the research and the readings that we've done as a school, we were focusing more on the formative assessment of student learning and understanding. But, you know, again, that's formative, it's not summative, you know.
I just wanted to see if it could work, right?
In that regard, we did. We wanted to see if we could get some summative data, and we did. So, you know, that was good. But at this point, it's really, you know, you are dealing with a different kind of instruction, and you have to formatively assess it as it goes on the day-to-day. You know, the important thing, though, is dealing with the students that didn't show up, the students that were not there, the students that were disengaged, the students that did not give the effort as they sat in their room, lying down in their bed underneath their covers. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
that's the concern, you know, I mean, my concern. You know, I mean, it's not, and this is my own personal opinion, I don't think it's an optimal learning environment, nor is our society set up for that now. And then you're also dealing with, in my mind, the social emotional learning needs that have to be taking place right now. How do you deal with a group of students who are stressed, who are afraid, you know, who are frustrated, who are missing their friends, and how do you deal with that social emotional dealing with this concept if everybody is still separate? You see, I mean, that's big. That's big, because the one thing that came out when I was talking to teachers and kids, and this is why the Zoom lessons were so good, is that we miss our friends. We miss our social life. You know, and that has to, there's a lot to be said for that. And I can tell you, I sat, you know, whenever the kids got on their Zoom breaks and they would talk amongst themselves, and, you know, I would sit there and I'd listen to them. And it was remarkable. It was just remarkable to listen to these kids chattering so much because they missed each other. You know, I mean, there's something to be said for that. And I see Ms. Garcia saying, yeah, I listened to some of that too, right?
There were a couple of days where I did work from home, and the chatter was, you know, Maggie would have to mute every once in a while, or she's not my social butterfly, but Luke is. But it was the same way when Salinas came back and they started the Zoom lesson.
Yeah.
That was the most exciting thing for him, you know, just to be able to communicate and to see his friends. We noticed a huge difference just emotionally with him and how he was handling all of the lessons. And he was, you know, really eager to get things done because they were going to talk about whatever the lesson was on Zoom. So it was great. For us, it was great. Maggie enjoyed, you know, reconnecting with her friends after, you know, that sudden everybody go home and that's it, you know, kind of. It was shocking for them. It was very shocking for them to just be sent home. And
there was
what we heard was, they didn't know why until, you know, they got home to the parents and we kind of had to explain things, and they're still going, but so there's no school, you know?
Right. What?
I'm not going to see my friend. Am I going to see them in April? Well, you know, so we had those conversations, and even though we thought they were doing well emotionally and they were still happy and everything was fine, we didn't realize how it had affected them until they could see their friends. And then we just saw them light up, and they perked up. It was great. I commend the teachers just for engaging them even on Zoom and games. And I got involved in some of the trivia stuff, which I realized I'm not smarter than a fifth grader at all. I was really, really put in my place a couple times when the final scores shot up on the screen, and I was like 25 out of 29. So, but again, you know, just the participation and the teacher's enthusiasm and their energy, and it really came through, you know, the laptops, and it infected the kids. I mean, they responded very well. And it shows how much they need that interaction, not just with their fellow students, but with their teachers too. They miss their teachers so much. We had to tell our son to stop texting Miss Salinas. She got 16 texts, I think, within an hour from my son, who claimed to not remember his password 10 different times. And poor Miss Salinas, I could see the progression and her frustration with him.
Right.
Just in the text, because I was getting them also on Remind. So, I, you know, Luke, stop it. You know, we'll help you when we get home. he missed her. Yeah. He missed her so much. He knew his password, but he had missed her so much. So
right.
I really, as a parent in this group, I appreciate what the teachers had to figure out on a moment's notice and how to make things work and how to engage the kids and teach them at the same time and from a distance. So hopefully it pays off, and the next test that they do shows some improvement and some growth, and we can keep going in that direction, because, you know, education is what we're here for, and to make sure that they get that as well as keeping them safe. But
yeah. Definitely. Totally agree,
Ms. Carson. I just can't help but say this, you know, but I mean, that's just a testament to really the culture of that Bill and Shannon set, the nimbleness by which they were able to respond, with the priority being children. I mean, that is huge. When you think of some of the other districts never even got out the starting blocks, you know, in terms of it. We as a board really do, owe a lot of thanks to Bill and to Shannon and to the teaching staff, because that was an above and beyond, no doubt about it, above and beyond approach on their part. So good stuff.
Thank you for recognizing that.
So the last ones are honestly much of the same. It would just be a split where some children come in the AM, other children come in the PM. And then the last one, which my guess is where we'll probably have to lean on the most, is somewhat of a split model where we'll have on-site instruction as coupled with, for those that need it, that remote learning aspect. Any questions, board members? I know that we had listed out some pros and cons there. If you can think of any additional pros and cons, we're definitely open. Again, this was our initial stab. Thank you, Mr. Anderson and Ms. Brandner. I really relied on you both to pull this together along with the information in this table.
If you're going to do the split option, how are you going to handle it with the teachers?
That again is one of the problems.
Doreen and I spoke about that at length yesterday, and we think that rather than trying to schedule, you know, different grades and different classes, if you have a higher percentage doing it online or something like that, it would make scheduling and grouping a lot more smooth if those that are participating online simply joined in the classroom that was already occurring physically through a computer.
Oh, okay.
So that way it's still that teacher's students.
Right, like a Zoom thing that we do.
Exactly, like a group Zoom, or, you know, one child's on one laptop and sits at a table with four, you know, in-person children, and, you know, depending on the number. But Doreen and I were talking yesterday, and we think that might be the way to handle that scheduling and ensuring that teachers aren't working double duty.
Oh, and that way too, you know, that the kids would see all each other.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You got the social aspect there too. It's almost like they're almost there. They're just.
Will there be some technology? I mean, I don't know whether or not there can be something with some of the whiteboard technology, et cetera, where that could be, you know, programmed such that, you know, you could have a larger viewing screen for those students to connect. So they really do get a sense of being there in terms of it. You know, I don't know. I think we're probably going to see all kind of innovations
popping up
in the next three months or so. And so we just kind of keep our ear to the ground in terms of it and put some money aside, because we'll probably have to jump on it right away, because everybody will be trying to come up with creative ways to engage students, particularly when you've got this social distancing issue and they're going to have to deal with maybe fewer children in the classroom, but also in terms of enrollments, are still going to need to have enrollments at a certain number. So, you know, I think it's something for us to keep our eye on for sure.
The next piece, board members, and we talked about it a little bit, is really the survey, the results. We did go ahead and do a really brief survey with our parents, and it just was comprised of these two questions, as you know, just as we're trying to plan to get feedback on really which options do they prefer and what it would take, when would they feel comfortable sending their children to school. Briefly, you can see we had a pretty good percentage of responses, considering we posted it for 10 days. It was 100% online. We relied on our teaching staff to get the message out. We also placed the link on our website. My guess is, though, that the majority of the responses came through our teaching staff and their support. We broke it down, but basically by San Bernardino and El Centro together, so you could get a feel for as a group. And then we split it out between San Bernardino and El Centro. As we spoke earlier, many of the parents prefer just coming back to school, school resumes as normal, but with all of the additional precautions in place, the cleaning, the sanitizing, and the social distancing involved. Additional feedback also, we asked also what their conditions for return were. Many of them said that extra cleaning and sanitization piece in both San Bernardino and El Centro.
Oh, when you look at the data there too, Doreen, I mean, I'm just looking at El Centro. We're really dealing with 78% of the population that responded saying, okay, we're ready to go back to school with the demonstrated cleaning and the plan for social distancing, and we're ready to roll. And then you're looking at maybe 20% or so of the population, which is about 26 of the respondents, has said, I'm going to wait for a vaccine, right? So when you look at the data, and I mean, I'm just going with the parents I've spoken to that come up to pick up report cards and call the school and stop and by, you know, I get the sense that a large portion of our population say, all right, what's the plan going to be? How do you ensure cleanliness? How do you ensure distancing? How are you going to ensure, what is our plan as a school? And let's just go there and then deal with that, you know? I mean, I get that sense, you know? And I think then it's that process of what we're talking about, making the changes due, communicating with the parents, siloing children if we need to, and doing what we do with the extensive cleaning and the social distancing as best we can.
You know, in the parents that were surveyed that indicated that they were most desirous of waiting for, you know, a vaccine in terms of it, were they parents of younger children, or did it kind of go across the board?
We didn't track who was answering.
If
there was a lack of anonymity, we would have had a much, much smaller number of parents participate.
Okay.
I think, Gerald, that's the stuff that we canvass after, if we make a choice, or when we make a choice to say, this is what it's going to be, then we have to be open And we have to open the communication and the door to the people who don't feel like that and say, well, we understand when we surveyed, there was a portion of the population that say they wanted this.
Right.
And we would appreciate communication then from these parents so that we can identify the grade and so we can identify what we need to do to be able to provide the education for you as well.
Right. Right, until you feel confident. Got you. Thank you.
And then the other thing, board members, that was included was just a list of those precautions that we were proposing to make when school resumes.
And there will probably be more of those.
Yes.
Yeah, as we rattle our brains.
Yes. Yes. Any questions on, the environmental impact of education? I know it dovetailed with our recent destruction of instructional models. Before we kind of transition, and I'll give a brief update on where we're at with our San Diego Charter School update. Okay. So a couple months ago, I think we came and we presented an idea of partnering with a local nonprofit Neighborhood House Association to develop a charter school that would replicate Ballington Academy and at the same time pair it with the social service model that Volunteers of America provides as well as National Neighborhood House Association. So just really a brief update, much like we talked about earlier, the environment of education at this point, we really are working on the timing issue. When would it be best to submit a petition right now to an authorizer, a brand new authorizer that already has a lot of charter schools within its district? What would be the best timing to present our charter to them to ensure us an opportunity for a yes? We know the districts at this point are grappling with all of the uncertainties that we're grappling with. So we believe that right now is probably not the best, but we should probably take this time to really make sure we have a stellar charter document. Hopefully we'll know a little bit more about the budgeting and the numbers to be able to finalize, get closer to a known position on the budget. And then at some point, be able to present our charter to them with a higher likelihood of getting to a yes. We know in this district, we have reached out to their charter school office. Their charter school office is very matter of fact. They're not exactly pro charter. We hear through the grapevine that neither this district nor the county office of ed right now are pro charter, which makes sense. Under AB 1505, one of the items that does come into law with initial charters is consideration of the fiscal impact that the charter might have upon the school district. I don't think it would take them a very amount of time right now to make an argument saying that they could not accept, especially if education is going to face cuts, that charter would impact them fiscally. So with all of that, we will continue to work on our charter petition. The other aspect we know is most likely is we're probably not going to be able to go front door through the charter school office on this one. We're probably going to have to use some political might or political relationship building that will allow us to develop the foundation again, as with most charters, to potentially position us to a positive yes. I did want to just bring the board members up to date on that. We're still planning on developing a charter in San Diego. Again, it's just timing. And really trying to look at timing. And right now it might be best to kind of take a step back and just wait for a better window we'll still continue our partnership. We've had several meetings with Neighborhood House Association. Through that, we're continuing to build our relationship with them. We were able to select a district, which is San Diego Unified School District, a very large district in San Diego. At this point, we'll just continue to build our relationships and work on the actual document. Any questions on San Diego Charter? And where we're at with that?
Doreen, can you explain again why we are working with NHA?
We wanted to bring together, we thought Neighborhood House Association is a very large partnership, a very large nonprofit organization in San Diego. Uh-huh. They actually have the majority of all of the early Head Start as well as Head Start contracts, much like Volunteers of America has in San Bernardino and El Centro. They're the Head Start, early Head Start provider in San Diego. Along with that, they're a multi-purpose organization that has access to a lot of mental health services. They have food programs. They do a lot of the essential services. They do preschool programs as well. They have contracts with the California Department of Education, much like we do, but in San Diego. So we thought that through this partnership, that would build a great opportunity and program for children in San Diego.
Thank you. I just forgot all the stuff that they're doing. So yeah, that definitely makes sense.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you. I kind of went right into the next topic, huh? And then, a brief update on our collective bargaining. We are supposed to annually, we are up to negotiate with our BEA, our teachers union. At this point, we have reached out to them. And we are just waiting for them to reach back out to us to begin that process. We know under COVID, it probably has impacted not only the union, but sort of what they've been working through as well. We did offer to do a Zoom meeting in the interim and are just waiting for them to reach back out to us on that. Okay.
And now for the consent agenda action items. And attachment D is the approval of the May minutes. Do I have a motion to approve minutes?
Doreen, you need to change the date from April 21st to May.
Thank you.
Good catch, Carla.
So it's April minutes, right?
May minutes.
April?
May minutes.
They're minutes from May, yes.
Approval of May board minutes.
But it says that on the agenda.
Yeah, but not on this document.
On the minutes stop? Themselves, it's reflecting that they're April minutes instead of May.
Okay, I will change that.
Well, motion to approve with the adjustments.
I'll
do second. Okay. We have a motion and a second. Can we have a roll call vote?
Carla?
Yes.
Hilda?
Yes.
And Denise?
Yes.
Okay. Motion passes.
Okay, and the next item is attachment E, approval of financial reports.
Board members, at this point, I would like permission to pull this agenda item. We have had some transition, I think, as we mentioned at our last board meeting. Our CFO has transitioned, and through this process working with back office, our CFO took a little bit of time and is really looking at the board reports, and some questions have arisen. So at this point, we're going through that process of investigating and trying to answer those questions. And I would like to ask the board members if we could bring back to you at our next board meeting a year-end financial position of the financials.
Sure.
Okay. Do I have a motion to bring the financial reports back? Or I guess I should say, do I have a motion to pull the item for another meeting? Is that how the motion should be posed, Doreen?
Yes.
Okay.
So moved.
Did we have a second? I'm sorry. Okay, there we go. And a roll call vote. Carla?
Yes.
Hilda? Hilda? I think he's still there, no?
Yeah, he's got his number there.
Yeah. Dilda? Do you approve?
Yeah, he's still there.
Maybe he's on mute.
Dilda, are you on mute?
I don't see him anymore.
Oh, did we lose him?
That disconnected.
Oh, maybe we did.
Okay.
I just texted him.
Well, he did the second. So.
He did do the second. I think he approves, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Okay. I think so.
Denise?
Yes.
Okay. Motion passes. Now we just don't have a quorum to approve the rest of the items.
Oh, no.
I know, right?
Well, you'll have to call back in, correct?
Yes. I can't move on because they're all approval items. Huh, they're all action items, man.
Well, while we're waiting, Ms. Brentner and Mr. Anderson, I'm not going to say when and if, when the school opens up.
Yes.
I know personally, and even at work, we've had troubles obtaining supplies. Do you foresee issues obtaining disinfectant wipes, enough hand sanitizer, like quantities is what I'm talking about?
Right. I've already allegedly, I got to talk to the people, someone from VOA, but I allegedly absconded I think 3 gallons of hand sanitizer that we're going to fill into the classroom sanitizers. I've got 350 emergency masks that I've purchased already coming. I have 3 cases, 12 hand, you know, spray disinfectants for topical things. Okay. And then I've also purchased 2 cafeteria tables for social distancing in the cafeteria as needed. So those are the things that I have purchased right now using the 5,000 CARE funding to take us hopefully September, October, November, waiting for the funding to come from. You know, but from what I'm getting from emails from Global Industrial and American Industries and all these different people, that they're making a mint. They're loving it, you know?
So they have the stock and everything's available when you've gone to purchase it. It's not back ordered for weeks at a time.
I'm not ordering from the places that are back ordering. Like you cannot get the Clorox wipies anymore.
The wipes, yeah. Costco came out this past week with their own Kirkland brand of wipes.
Really?
So we might want to keep our eye out. I missed it, but I did hear about it. So I'm going to keep my eye out. And Bill, you may want to, along with the teachers, keep your eye out, because they're not going to let you get but one per customer.
Right.
So I have been able to order some offline, online and build a supply. And what we're trying to do is to create a central supply so that all of the programs and projects of Volunteers of America can draw on that. So Bill is ordering some things on his own, but we're going to try to have a backup system for additional capacity to accommodate. Because it's going, once school starts, everybody is going to really be in a flurry for trying to get those items.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am not quite as advanced as Bill is on this particular endeavor. I don't, my site doesn't have the cash flow to be able to order those right now. I've been kind of keeping an eye on the different organizations that might have this. But I did participate in the VOA donation of the gallons of hand sanitizer. I want to say I got 3 or 5 or something along those lines. But as we get closer to the end of the fiscal year, I'm working with Doreen on when we have the cash on hand to start ordering those things. That being said, I did order 4 infrared thermometers to prepare.
Yeah, no, we've got 3 of those. Yeah. So, you know, just to get us through the beginnings, you know,
mm-hmm.
Very important.
And so the masks that you have, Bill, those, the emergency masks, are they for the students that come to school and oops, I forgot mine kind of thing? Or is it just?
Oh no, we don't have enough for that. No, people are definitely, okay. those are for emergencies. Somebody's sick, somebody is coughing, okay. Somebody needs to come to the office, somebody needs to go home. You know, they're not, oh, well, let's just dispose of these. No. Because then they'll be gone in about a week. You know, I mean, we have that, everybody.
That was my other concern, yeah. Okay. Yeah,
okay.
I think we're all here again.
Still the back?
Yes, I'm back.
I see his number up there.
Okay. Yay. Okay.
And I think we were with the next, moving on to the next item. Approval of COVID operational report?
Yes. Board members, I had presented this art template last month, the CDE actually issued, in lieu of our LPAC, which we'll be due in December, they requested that we prepare a COVID operational report. And that's required by one of the governor's executive orders. So I have before you a version of San Bernardino as well as El Centro. It simply just asks what we have done in these last few months to accommodate students with our distance learning and how we have provided meals as well as childcare services for those families.
Well, I move to approve the COVID operational reports for San Bernardino and El Centro.
I'll second that.
Nope. Okay. All right.
And a roll call vote.
Carla?
Yes.
Denise?
Yes.
And Dilda?
Yes.
Motion passes.
And it looks like item or attachment G, approval of board meeting dates for 2020 and 2021 school year.
Board member, Madam Chair.
There was one more items before that, right?
Yeah, the ratification and the approval of the consolidated app.
Oh, oops, I just skipped on over that, didn't I?
Okay.
Sorry about that. We'll go back up.
The
SB 740 application, sorry.
Yes, that's the funding that is allocated for schools for charter schools specifically for reimbursement for their facilities. It is that funding that is somewhat changeable. They allocate X number of dollars based on the number of charter schools that apply. They divvy it out. So sometimes we will budget for a certain amount, and then at the end of the year, as you know, we've had to make some changes only because there's only so much funding available, and then they divvy it out to the charter schools. That application was due. We had submitted it. Ms. Harris had signed off as the board chair. So at this point, I just need ratification of those two applications. It's a standard process. Every year we submit the application.
Okay. Do we have a motion to approve the ratification of SB 740 applications for both San Bernardino and El Centro?
So moved.
Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Thank you. And a roll call vote.
Carla?
Yep.
Yelda?
Yes.
And Denise?
Yes. Okay. And then, I'm sorry, Doreen, was that also to consolidate through the application?
The next
or just one, to ratify it?
The next one is the consolidated application, which is our request for federal dollars. And that they ask us to submit one in December and then one in June. So this is part two of the consolidated application.
Okay. And I will make a motion to approve the consolidated application for San Bernardino and El Centro. Do I have a second?
Second.
And a roll call vote?
Denise?
Yes.
Carla?
Yep.
And Dilda?
Yes.
Thank you. Motion passes.
Okay. Now the approval of board meeting date for the 2020-2021 school year.
Board members, I am just presenting to you a tentative calendar of board meeting dates. I believe they all align to the third Tuesday of the month. The changes that do not align are based on always our second interim and our budget approval process, where we push those dates back a little bit to give back our back office time to produce those.
I'll make a motion to approve the approval of the board meeting dates for 2020-2021 as presented.
I'll second. And we can have a roll call vote, Dory.
Carla?
Yep.
Denise?
Yes.
Yelda? Did we lose?
Yelda?
Yes.
Yelda? Thank you. Motion passes.
Okay. The last item.
Action item on the agenda
is the thank you letter to staff.
A couple months ago, board members, we had talked about drafting a thank you letter on behalf of the board of directors that we would provide to our staff. I have it before you. I'm open to make any changes. And then once it's approved, we'll move forward. And I was hoping maybe I could get each person's signature. I don't know how I could do that electronically. Maybe send it to me. I can send it to each of you and then cut and paste it into one document, and then we can release it to the staff. That could work.
Or you could have friends sign it. I had a friend of mine that used to autograph famous people's portraits and give them to people. So like, you know, he'd have like an Elvis Presley, he signed it, Elvis. I just want to give this to you. Elvis gave this to me, and I think you should have it.
Or perhaps the board members could just send Doreen a JPEG of their own signatures, and Doreen could just insert them as pictures into the Word document.
I could do.
Well, if you want to be official, but.
Not that I'd be opposed to, you know, handing a signed picture of Elvis to somebody, but.
That was just, yeah, the same impact, right?
I get such a kick out of that. He'd give these portraits to people. They'd be, oh my God, I can't believe you got there's their autograph. Oh yeah, I was hanging out with them backstage. Here you go.
Well, this is a very nice letter. Thank you. Did you make it, Joe?
Doreen did a great job in putting this letter together. Absolutely. Oh,
Doreen. Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. I had a lot of input. A lot of input.
That's great. Do we have a motion
if the group would be open to it. Electronic signatures probably could suffice, you know, if we could get the chair's signature and then electronic signature, that probably is going to be easy because I'm just looking at the spacing. We're probably not even going to have enough space for everybody's signature. But if we could do that, that might be a way to go. I mean, I'm open either way. Either way we go.
Or one person could sign it, just the Ballington Board of Directors, you know.
In terms of the, right, I mean, because it says, you know, the CDE Ballington Board of Directors, and, you know, then Christy could sign it, board chair. And I think you could, you know, it would suffice, I think, if everybody was okay with that.
Yeah, definitely. That's fine.
Whichever you decide, I don't mind sending an electronic signature or having somebody else sign as the board. That's fine with me. Okay. Do I have an approval for the letter? Or a motion, I'm sorry?
Well, I make a motion to approve the thank you letter to the staff as presented.
I'll second.
Do I have a roll call vote?
Carla?
Yep.
Yelda?
Yes.
And Denise?
Yes.
Yay.
Okay. Any closing comments from anybody?
I would like to just offer the thought. I would ask Shannon if she and maybe her staff, Dr. Venus Mixon, and maybe whoever else might be appropriate, would engage in a process of trying to identify a parent that could serve on the Ballington board. I think that would give us some additional representation from the Inland Empire area. And so, Shannon, if you would work on that, I think that would be very helpful.
We can do that.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Any other closing comments for tonight? Okay. And with no additional comments, date and time and location of next meeting to be determined.
Well, it was just approved on as far as the board meeting dates. We historically have gone dark in July, and then we resumed back in August. So it would be August 18. I put to be determined on there because it wasn't officially approved at the time of the agenda.
Okay. So we'll see each other again in August.
Right.
Okay. With that, I adjourn the meeting at 7:32.
Thank you.
Thank you.